When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the A to Z Sports Preds Nashcast, a.k.a. Beefer and the Brute on 1100 The Sports Disease. I'm your host, Alex Daugherty. I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Link, who came up with that wonderful title for us. Today, it has been a very revealing week for the Nashville Predators. A 3-2 loss to Dallas, a back-to-back overtime and shootout wins for Chicago, and then a 4-3 loss to Tampa. We will discuss the week that was for the Preds. They are now 4-4 on the season. So we saw some things this week to show us just how average and mediocre the Preds truly are. Nothing really should have surprised us, as you've pointed out before. We will discuss that. And then we are going to talk about the odd life of John Hines. Some things that John Hines does that are just simply bizarre. How was your week, Link?
The lead-in name is courtesy of Tim Burke's sports show generator. I think it's a morning show generator that he made for Deadspin a long time ago that he rehosted recently. So I thought it was a great time to revive it and see what sort of morning show you and I would produce. And frankly, I was appalled, which feels appropriate for a morning show. Yeah. As far as my actual week, it was my I started a new job on Monday last week.
That's right.
So it was a lot of acclimation, a lot of information overload, a lot of, oh, hey, I gotta do good. I gotta get stuff done. So this weekend has been a welcome respite, even as the Predators have not been quite so refreshing.
Right. Information overload, trying to get things done. That would be a good way to describe the Predators against any good team in NHL.
That is Dante Fabro night in and night out.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme with this team. Like, how can they get a win when they really maybe aren't very good? So we saw the team this week sort of push the boundaries of mediocrity, I would say, because they found two wins out of a Chicago team that is just not very good, and then they had two losses against Dallas again, and then also Tampa last night on Saturday. That brings them to 4-4 in the season. They are currently, it's early, but they're currently outside of the playoff bubble, right comfortably where they were last year. It seems like we're seeing the exact same things happen to the Predators this year that we saw last year, or even just previous weeks this year. Bad special teams, no offensive depth, just so many terrible things going wrong in their own zone and on the other end, especially in the penalty kill. Goaltending just not good enough to keep them in it. For years the goaltending was enough to keep the Predators in it, and it's just not right now. So. What did you think this week? What did you see this week out of the Predators?
I saw a lot of effort. I saw a lot of hard work. I saw a willingness to stand up for their teammates. Now, these are things that don't in and of themselves win games when you lack talent and a good strategic plan, which are things I definitely have not seen. The Dallas game was another Dallas game. The Predators didn't look great, even though it was close. I mean, that seems to be a theme that I want to point out, is that the Predators continue to not look good, but they continue to have close games.
Yes.
This just keeps reminding me of the Barry Trotz years still. Like, there's a team on the ice and a bunch of likable dudes, and they work real hard, and they commit to the style that's being played, and they do what the coach asks, and they sort of get by. And they're like a 500 team, and they try to make the playoffs. You wouldn't think a team with Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis would be that sort of team, but they are. And, you know, we'll, I know this is our main theme for the day, but it's just, it's perplexing how Coach Hines can't get more out of these guys. Now, I want to couch something, is that I think Duchesne especially has been really, really effective at everything but scoring goals this year.
Yeah.
It's one of the most perplexing things is he does so much stuff right, and he cannot seem to get a goal on the board.
The game in Tampa last night, if you were watching to the end, what would have been the game tying goal, he hit off the post with what, 30 seconds left in the game. Yeah,
that's just him all over. And I'm sure he's frustrated, and the frustration probably makes it more difficult. But the thing is, he's still going out there and doing the work to create offense. It's just nothing's coming of it.
Yeah. No, I would agree with all that. The special teams is the part of this that's the most frustrating. Look, special teams only take up like 20% of the game, like in terms of time, in terms of, you know, minutes of the game, 20 to maybe 25% of the game, mm-hmm. usually. But it is just destroying the Predators right now because they have the worst penalty kill in the league, 31st, dead last, 63% on the penalty kill.
It's what, 12 of the 24 goals scored against the Predators have come on the power play?
Yeah. Half have been on the power play, or half have been on the penalty kill, half have been at even strength, right?
How much longer do you just beat your head against the wall as the PK coach, the special teams coach, and realize that it's not working?
I think part of it is, you know, they've tried to change it up. They tried to give Roman Josi not as much PK time. They have all these new players like Eric Halla and Nick Cousins coming in to try to do it. So I don't know. I mean, I think
this is the thing. We're going to get to this a lot. If you're struggling the PK, if you're struggling on offense, the solution is not to give your most talented players less opportunities to be talented.
Yeah, that's
and to do
true.
Their job. But that seems to be the philosophy of this hockey team. Is that?
Yeah, I know you said it well there, and the power play I think is another example of that. The power play did manage to score a couple goals against Tampa, although I would say one of them, the Matthew Olivier goal, was the exact opposite of what they have been trying to do, but somehow he just did. Like, they threw Matthew Olivier out there, and he just goes directly to the net, almost as if, like, he was breaking a rule. He just, like, beelines to the front of the net and then scores. And so Matthew Olivier is not going to be a part of the power play moving forward. So you can almost count that as not a power play.
Tell that to Predators fans, because I think they're convinced that he is, like, some type of, like, you know, like, a tragic Southern hero come to save Nashville at this point.
The hero from Biloxi come to save the power play.
Yeah, when he was moving back to Canada at the ripe age of 3 months old, he really brought a lot of that Southern culture back with him. Right. I mean, like, I was...
Yeah, that was pretty silly. But so the Predators, the penalty kill, the power play, the special teams overall has been awful. They've really hurt the team just from day one of this season. You feel like it's gonna just get better, but it never does. So why would it? It doesn't seem like it'll change much. I'm still holding out, you know, some thought that the penalty kill will improve. I don't think it's going to be 63% all season.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they have too many talented players to let that happen.
They got to work on. I mean, on the PK, the issues, you have discipline issues, you have positioning issues.
Yeah.
You have communication issues. These are all things that I can see happening on these penalty kills. It's happening at 5-on-5 too, but it's definitely happening. And if it's happening at 5-on-5, it's going to happen on the PK. I mean, the thing that killed me, I almost turned the game off yesterday. I think it's the second Tampa goal. The one that Foot.
Callan Foot.
Cal Foot scored. And, you know, I don't even know if this directly led to the goal happening. It may have happened because the shot was so perfect. I don't even know if it would have affected it. But what happened is you had Faber, who's covering the front of the net and being kind of Rene's guardian. And Stamkos was coming down the middle of the ice. And so Faber looks, sees Steven Stamkos coming out and is like, oh, I got to cover Steven Stamkos. So he starts skating out. And what he didn't apparently see is that Cunnan was already getting onto Stamkos. Cunnan actually looked over. You can see if you watch the replays, he looks over and he sees Favreau, and he clearly doesn't expect Favreau to be coming out to double man Stamkos. So now you've got two people in Stamkos, nobody in front of Rinne. Foot is off somewhere else. Palat is actually now, who was behind the net, nobody knew he was there. Faber leaves Palat totally uncovered. So now, even if Foot puts it off of Rinne's pads or there's any kind of issue,
there's a rebound.
Palat was there, totally unmarked, while you have two guys up high in the slot covering Stamkos, who is not part of the play yet. That is just typical at this point. There's no communication, no awareness. And I don't know if that caused the goal, because it was involving two players who weren't directly involved, but it certainly didn't help to pull all of that manpower away from Rinne and leave Rinne one-on-one, or really two-on-one at that point.
Well, I want to add two things. I think that's a great example of what you brought out about the penalty kill. It struggles right now.
I think that was even strength.
The Cal Foot goal, I think, was a power play goal.
Was it?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I can double check that. But what I was going to mention was, so the first thing you mentioned was, oh, no, you're right. It wasn't even strength. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Two things there. Number one, new players. Luke Cunnan has never worked with Dante Favreau prior to the season. So he is not maybe aware of Dante Favreau's, shall we say, struggles in the defensive zone, in particular with matching up players and maybe getting a little bit lost there, because that's one of his struggles. And then the other thing is goaltending not saving the day. Look, Pekka of 5 years ago, he probably stops that goal. I mean, that's not a great angle for a shooter. I mean, it was a little deep, you know, he was pretty deep into the circle. It wasn't like, it wasn't exactly where Stamkos normally scores. It was where, you know, it was just kind of a deeper goal. It wasn't something that normally you would expect Pekka to stop that, but he doesn't really even come close, and he lets it in. So, that's all. Only thing I would add is you got a combination of what you mentioned about, you know, defensive matching up, and then also new guys playing with new guys and goaltending not saving the day.
You want to go deep on that Callan Foot goal? So here's some deep stats you don't necessarily need. So that came from 40 feet out.
40 feet
at an angle of 51 degrees. So that's a, you know, not the sharpest angle, but not like a high probability area. It had expected goal value of 2.2%.
Yeah, there you go. 2.2%. You would expect Pecorini to stop that all day.
Like that was, I mean, now I will say it was a hard shot. It was a precise shot. And it was on Rene's blocker side. And, you know, he's, of course, his legendary for his glove.
Yeah.
His blocker side is not as strong, but it's historically been good. But I think Rinne was caught a little bit off guard.
I think it's safe to say that was the turning point. I think the Predators had just missed a chance on the other end, and they give up that. It's 2-1, then it's 3-1. Obviously, when they go down 4-1, it's just, you know, they didn't have enough to come back. And in the third period, you know, their chances were there, and you know they could have tied it up, but the game really was kind of lost in that second period, of course, and in particular that moment right there. So that's a really good point. Let's see, there was something else. Oh, I was going to mention this. I don't want to derail the show here, but I did want to talk about this because this was fun. In the middle of that game, as soon as the Predators give up a goal to a player who scores their first ever NHL goal, you see this narrative that's like, the Predators have given up an historical number of first goals to NHL players. They give up more first goals than anyone. And the truth is that there's really nothing to that. I mean, look, there's been thousands of NHL players that have played in the league. A lot of them are going to score their first goals. Some of them are going to be against the Nashville Predators. So just some numbers here. That was actually the 74th. Cal Foot became the 74th player to score his first goal against the Predators. They've been around since 1998. Just for some comparison, other teams have had something similar. Minnesota has given up 69 first goalers. I'm calling them first goalers. Columbus has 66. They were established a couple years later. But the list of players that scored their first goal against the Predators, it's not bad. It's like, you know, there's not like Hall of Famers on there, except for maybe one. You're talking about like Dustin Byfuglien scored his first goal against Predators. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Brian Gionta, Jonathan Chichu.
Wait. Brian Gionta
scored his first goal against
Jonathan
the Predators.
Chichu.
Yes.
God, that's an interesting list.
The other two names that just stood out to me, Chris Kunitz and Tyson Barry, scored their first goals. There were two players who played for the Predators who had originally scored their first goal against the Predators, Eric Nystrom and Rocco Grimaldi. So it was while everyone else was wallowing in a horrible second period, I was just looking up stats like that against the Predators. That was a lot of fun. So
I mean, it's certainly probably a really good use of your time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Brian Gionta, that would surprise me too, because he played forever. And I think his first goal was like 2000 or something, 2001. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, because he's thoroughly retired. He's been retired for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, actually, he just retired in 2018.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. He came back to play. And didn't he play like on the Olympic team or something randomly?
He did. He played a couple games. He played a handful of games for the U.S. Olympic team.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, anyways, just wanted to bring that up because that was fun for me anyways. But the game was not fun for Predators fans because they lost. The Predators lost, and they are now 4-4.
They had kind of down games against Dallas, down game against Tampa, where they looked sort of dull. They back-to-back overtime wins against
Chicago. Yeah, we didn't talk about
Chicago.
Let's touch on that.
They made Malcolm Subban look more like Grant Fuhr. I don't even know what to say about those games, because the Predators come out, they should be dominant, and they just looked dull. In a lot of cases, like they couldn't get anything done.
I think that's what I would say about those games, is that they were way closer than they should have been. The Predators played essentially the same kind of game against the Chicago that they did against Dallas and Tampa, only Chicago is terrible, and they were able to squeak out two overtime wins against a team like Chicago, in which they lost in regulation to Dallas and Tampa. So I don't think they played much different at all in any of those games. I think that the second Chicago game was better defensively. They were pretty strong defensively in that one. Chicago did not have much going offensively in that game. And then in the first one, remember, that was the one where Patrick Kane had no shots or whatever. And I think they were keyed in on trying to stop their top players, and then almost ended up losing to their bottom players. Although the line is quite blurred for Chicago these days. So, the overtime winner by Roman Josi, beautiful goal. I mean, you can't say much more about that. It was a great play from him. Mikael Granlund pulled his defender away, and there was a rough switch on Chicago's end, and Roman Josi scores. And then the shootout winner, Matt Duchene, finally getting on the board, at least in some manner. So those are fine wins, but I think that what I see from this team is, you know, in the past, the Predators have been that team that has struggled against bad teams and then been like somehow good against good teams. I feel like this year is going to be the opposite. I think I've mentioned this before. I feel like this team's going to lose to teams that it needs to lose to, like Tampa, and they're going to win against teams that they probably should just beat, like Chicago, probably Detroit, which would put them right in the middle of the average. You know, that's going to put them right at average. If they're losing to Tampa and Dallas and Carolina, and they're beating Detroit and Chicago and maybe Florida, they're going to be right there in the middle and maybe on the playoff bubble.
I think the team so far, and I don't really – like, I've been waiting. I mean, before we started recording, we were talking about, like, hey, we're getting to that quarter point in the season. We have another week and a half before we're there, really, with the Predators having just three games next week. But this team isn't as good as I thought they would be. Now, that's a very loaded statement. There's a lot of conditions, because I thought they were going to be, like, you know, a little bit maybe 55, 60% chance of making the playoffs. But they don't have the defensive organization I thought they were going to have. I don't see consistently the harder to play against. It seems like the harder to play against is more taking penalties and then getting frustrated. I don't see them being more difficult to play against. Dallas came out and said, you guys are tougher now. No, you're not. And prove that and just boss them around. That's what frustrates me is I don't see the structure. I don't see the discipline that a squad like the Nashville Predators needs to be successful. Because I think they have so many tools that they just can't pull them together. And I don't have any explanation consistently for why they can't get production out of their top six. I'm still working on figuring that out. I'm sure there's some people out there who like look at it and are like, I know the answer. I can't figure it out right now.
Yeah. It could be personnel. It could be structure. It could be,
it could be the lack of real good strategic planning as far as how you're handling the offense and tactical adjustments to your opponent. That's kind of what I'm thinking. We'll get to that a little bit more in the oddities section that's coming up.
Well, actually, yeah, we're going to do that right now. So let's talk about John Hines, because in thinking about the structure and the direction of this team, you can't have that conversation without talking about John Hines. And there have been some very strange things that John Hines has done. Now, I want to mention this first, that he just coached his 40th game with Nashville. That's including the Arizona playoff series, or qualifying round series, rather. So tomorrow night, the Monday night game, will be his 41st game. The reason I mention that is because that is what is, in a normal season, would be the halfway mark of the team, right? So if John Hines had first started coaching at the beginning of a season, this would now be the halfway mark. So you can make some sort of judgment based on that. So far, he's 21-18-1 in those 40 games, which is not a very good record. Even though it's more than 500, it's not a winning record in the NHL. It's like a 530 save percentage or win percentage. So anyways, I say all that. There have been some very strange things that John Hines has done in these first eight games this season. For example, Colton Sissons getting more 5-on-5 ice time than Matt Duchene in Saturday's loss to Tampa.
Now, I will say, odd to us, not odd if you're listening to what Hines is saying. Because they were talking about this in the broadcast last night, that Hines rewards players who have the right attitude, who do the things he asks, and plays in the way he asks. If you are not doing those things, or he doesn't perceive you doing those things, your ice time goes down, you don't get the same deployments. And because I think it was Chris Mason who made a very big point of this, is that some coaches say, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you're not going to get ice time. You're going to get demoted lines. And and Mason said a lot of coaches, and I'm probably paraphrasing at this point, don't follow through. Hines follows through. Mm-hmm. So if you're not, So yeah, it's not odd if you listen to what he's actually saying.
That's correct. I think that, but like you said, I mean, Matt Duchene is part of John Hines's, demand here that they not generate offense, because Matt Duchene is generating offense, as you pointed out. So,
but he's not scoring goals, and maybe he's not like, he's also not like, Duchene is not great defensively. I mean, he has his defensive moments, but it's not his, what he does. He's a forward. He's not a defensive player.
Correct. Yeah. Some more oddities. Let's talk about just real quick on the power play. We've already touched on the power play a lot, but just a couple things. I already mentioned one. Just randomly throwing Matthew Olivier out there, and then he scores. I think that was just kind of hilarious. And then they finally put Ryan Ellis on the power play, on the first power play unit, which a number of people have been calling for, to replace Victor Arvidsson with Ryan Ellis, because Ellis is a much better, he's just a smarter offensive mind on the power play. And then it works. And then they kind of go away from it, and they start using the power play two more, which has Victor Arvidsson on it. So that was odd. There's the other things that are more lineup related. Healthy scratching Rocco Grimaldi. You mentioned something about not playing the right way. Is that what's happening there? That seems very odd to me, because Rocco Grimaldi seemed like the prototypical like workhorse. I mean, he's been, since he got here, he's been extremely an energizing force on that team. And yeah, there were times last year where he was the only player who seemed like they wanted to be out there.
I think that what Grimaldi's suffering from is there's too much of the same on the team now, because, you know, I'm going to lump some guys together that may not be fair to lump them together. But, like, I think Grimaldi, Holla, to a degree, Cunnin, these guys are all very samey. They're all kind of depth. Well, I don't. Olivier is more of a pure grinder, like, you know, grinder forward. The other three guys are all supposed to be depth scoring. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all guys who you bring in to do depth scoring, who you know, you want them to do other roles, and they usually, like, you know, are they any good in the power play? Maybe, I don't know. But, like, you just, I just think it's a matter of, are you going to dress Rocco Grimaldi or Eric Holla, or, you know, it, and frankly, I kind of think you may dress Grimaldi over Holla, but that's not what Hines thinks. I think Hines sees Holla as maybe being a more skilled player.
Right.
Certainly, the numbers don't really support that, but...
Right, yeah. And Grimaldi, I think... you're probably right. Where would he slot in over someone like Lee Cunnin? It would be tough to figure that out.
I mean, yeah, they're just jamming together a bunch of guys in the bottom six until it works, and it's just a mess.
So there was Jared Tenorti randomly getting a start over Mark Borowiecki. However, that was the second game of the back-to-back, so maybe that was part of the factor. But Jared Tenorti does not need to be playing on this team. He's an AHL player. How about Cole Smith? Remember that? He started. He started the very first game of the season. Where did he go? Why did that happen?
Well,
it's very strange.
I mean, I think you play him to get jitters out, get him an NHL game before there's any stakes.
Why have they not seen 1 ounce of Eli Tolvanen? If they need offense, there's a guy on the taxi squad who has more potential than anyone.
Cole Smith is a 25-year-old product of college. Granted, that was his, like, fifth professional game, his first four being in the ECHL. You can ask me any questions related to Cole Smith. I have no idea why he was signed. I don't know. Maybe he's gonna like retire and go and be a scout for the Predators. I don't know. He may be a real smart guy.
Yeah.
He may be a great leader, but he's not an NHL hockey player. I don't even know if he's an AHL hockey player.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
And that's a game they ended up winning. I think Cole Smith played like 5 minutes. I mean, it wasn't like it mattered.
He didn't do anything. He had one like near chance that was kind of lucky, but he didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. It just, I think maybe the biggest one here is, why haven't we seen Eli Tolvanen? Maybe it's related to what you just mentioned about the point about Grimaldi, is that there's a log jam. But if there's a log jam, it's a log jam of a bunch of rotting half logs that don't even really fit together, that don't even work.
I don't know. Could it be his skating? I mean, that's the thing. Tolvanen, like, everyone's like, if he had the skating, he'd probably be a superstar.
Yeah.
Maybe his skating is keeping him out of the lineup. And Hines is like, if you can't do this, you can't be in the lineup. And, you know, Tolvanen's maybe trying to get there or can't get there. I don't have an explanation. When your team can't score goals, they're what, 26th in goal scoring in the league right now?
Yeah, pretty bad.
I mean, I don't know why you're not trying to up the offense. Now, granted, I think they're 11th in goals against. So, you know, if they could get the PK straightened out, then you could watch some really boring hockey games and watch the Predators break the playoffs.
I think people are prepared for that. I think people would be totally on board with that being another team like they've seen in the past, where scoring is at a premium and there's a lot of close games, 1-0, 2-1, that kind of thing. Good goaltending, all that stuff. I think people would be on board with that if they're winning, right? I mean, I don't think they'd have any problem with that. And then
they did it for 15 years.
especially when your main goal scorers are some elite players like Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi and probably Matt Duchene and Victor Arvidsson, I guess. I think they are, if they're trying to find their identity still, we're 40 games into the John Hines era. Now, that's a very different 40 games than a normal season. It's been a very long road to get to that because of the huge issues with the COVID-19 pandemic and returning to play and all that stuff. So it's been a very different road. You can't fault him for that. But if we're 40 games in, have we seen enough of John Hines to think this is going in the right direction?
I think we have this list of oddities, and I think they all are odd. I think it shows that he's not really sure, or he's not sure either how he's either not sure how to deploy his assets in the most effective way, or his coaching philosophy prevents him from trusting his players to get the job done, because he's going to play the hustle guy over someone who doesn't look like he's working hard enough, or you know, it's like, you know, if I need to score, I need to do the following things. No, well, if you don't do the Hines things, you don't play. Mm-hmm. It puts the players in a difficult position. It constrains them in some ways. I don't necessarily get why Philip Forsberg needs to be coached to play grinding hockey and to use his body to get net position. The guy is a wizard with the stick, is a great skater, can dance around people. I don't want him taking the body. I want him with the puck, moving it in interesting places and doing interesting things. But he's being coached to do the opposite. And you know, can Forsberg throw the body around and you know, fight for position? Absolutely. He's a tough guy. He's got size and strength. But it's not using his skill set to the full extent. It seems like the only person who's really allowed to do their own thing is Roman Josi.
Like, right, yeah,
like for whatever reason Roman Josi is allowed to do whatever and it's fine, which I don't mind because he's super talented, but it does make me look at the rest of the team and wonder, like, you know, why do things this way? Why set up power play unit 2 with a bunch of cast-offs and then when you change things up, find something that works, give people an opportunity, you revert back to what's not working? I mean, we've all seen that, you know, that there's a combination of Duchesne, Forsberg, and Granlund that is spectacular. But they only get, like, they just kind of come together by accident rather than intent.
Do you think that there's a little bit of, like, why can't you be more like your brother stuff going on with the Roman Josi stuff, where it's like, he's obviously given free rein to do whatever. He can go anywhere in the offensive zone. He can play up as much. He can pinch whenever he wants. He can make mistakes and then not worry about his ice time cutting down. Do you think that there's some of that with, like, maybe a Dante Fabbro or maybe a Luke Cunnan, who's like, there's a little bit more hesitancy on their part because they know that they don't have the same clout as a Josi or even as a Forsberg. They can't take those chances. Do you think there's some of that?
So with Cunnan, especially coming to a new team, maybe, I mean, he's still pretty young.
Yeah.
So he's got some development, some time. I don't really know that Cunnan feels like he knows where his place is on the team quite yet. Is he a second liner? Is he a third liner? There's a little ambiguity there, and I think that makes it tough to settle in. Additionally, being a pandemic season, that's super weird. Dante Fabbro, I don't know. I was really looking for him to step up in his sophomore season. I have not seen it. At this point, I'm not sure if it's coaching or if he just doesn't have it. But I know he works hard. I know he has a great attitude. I know he's smart. I know he works hard. Those are the things that Hines and the coaching staff value. So he doesn't really see that. He doesn't really see it in the same way. Because that's the thing. The defense isn't really affected by a lot of the same things the forward lines are affected by. I mean, how bad do you have to be to actually get scratches defensemen? I mean, it seems like, you know, that Josi and Ellis are going to get a ton of time and that you're going to fill in the blanks. And, you know, certainly it took how long before we saw, you know, anything try, like they try to rebalance the second pairing. We saw a few times this season, you know, Ellis drop down with Ekholm and Fabbro jump up with Josi, but you can't do that because now Josi has to play babysitter. And it constrains Josi. So you need a good defenseman next to Josi so that Josi can do Josi things.
You know, the thing about Favreau, and I didn't know, we're going off script here, and that's totally fine. I was wondering about Favreau the other day, and I was thinking about how I think the first thing you said about him just maybe not having it is probably closer to true. But I think the other problem is, I think even if he improved and was better over his career, he's always going to be compared to what I think is an incredible crop of young defensemen in the NHL right now. I mean, even in his cohort, I was just looking it up. He's got guys like Jacob Chychrun. He's got guys like Charlie McAvoy, Sam Girard, Mikhail Sergachev. All those guys are in his draft class. And then all the people after that, Quinn Hughes, of course, Cale Makar. You've got, I'm missing some pretty big ones, but there's been some incredible defense. Miro Heiskanen, that's a big one. There's been some incredible defensemen drafted early on, Rasmus Dahlin, who are younger than him and better than him. And it's like, because he's not, you know, Rasmus Dahlin or Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, he's gonna stand up. Is he gonna end up being like a serviceable top four defenseman? I think probably, but I don't think he's not gonna become one of those other guys. He's just not that good. He doesn't have that tie. That even Ty Smith with the Devils looks better than him right now, and he's like 18 or something.
Yeah, I kind of think that maybe he's coming into a ceiling. I do think he could be deployed a little bit better. I think he could be encouraged to look for passes. I mean, setting him up really to run the breakout rather than him be the primary defense. Because a lot of times you have like a guy who's going to get the puck to the breakout defenseman, who's going to get the puck up the ice. Like, we've seen some incredible passes and some great moves from Favreau on that end. I just think he needs to be enabled on that a little bit more. I think he could be more effective. You know, I think he could be more effective. I just wonder if we're seeing another like squandering of development.
Yeah, you very well could be right.
The other thing that bugs me, and this has just been on my mind and I don't want to forget it, is I continue to wonder how much influence David Poile has, not just on roster decisions, like acquisition, you know, acquiring players, managing players, etc., but like on the actual philosophy of how the team executes. Now, I know he's the guy in charge of hiring coaches and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously that comes into play there, but it just seems so strange. And it's partially probably because of the pandemic year, but like after a few years of like really exciting, dynamic, powerful Predators teams, when the team is like on the downward trend, his response is to revert back to his old days, go into a turtle team, and, you know, just kind of coast along. It's just not an exciting or interesting way. It's not certainly not going to set the team up for success in the future. They're going to bleed talent, and they don't really – their pipeline is, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's not – again, it's lacking top-end forwards. Where have we heard that before? It's actually lacking, like, probably defensemen as well at this point.
I think that David Poile doesn't have a lot of influence in the development side at this point. And the only reason I say that is because he has made some really strange comments about like where players are going to play before. And then the Laviolette and or John Hines have been like, no, that's not going to happen. So, or at least that's not how it's turned out. I mean, remember the infamous Nick Bonino is going to be our 2C. And then 2 months into the season, they trade for Kyle Turris. I think David Poile doesn't have a ton of influence. I do think that the pandemic has really affected how he signs players. I think all of those signings were all like under $3 million or whatever, and they were all under $4 million at least. They were all very cost effective. They were all short contracts. He didn't go out and sign some big long term because I think he just doesn't know the long term, you know, ramifications of signing a big contract in a year like 2020, 2021. So that could be part of it, but none of us really know, but my gut is that he only has influence on what pieces are there, that he doesn't touch a lot of the development of the players.
I'm thinking about the philosophy.
Over the overall. You
know, does he bring the coaching staff into the office and say,
yeah,
this is the Nashville Predators, this is how we're going to play hockey, this is how we're going to be successful, find a way to make it happen. I mean, you know, it's the CEO giving orders to his head of coaching, you know, the VP of coaching. I find it to be kind of baffling, and fans certainly aren't responding well to how the play is happening.
That's true. Yeah. It's an interesting conversation. We'll have to save that one for another podcast, because I think there's a lot to that, and we might just have to see more of John Hines. We might just have to see more of the development here. But so far, I think it's safe to say the first chapter of the John Hines era has not been great. There are some things that are improved. There's other things that are not improved at all. The circumstances are tough, but John Hines definitely needs to have a better second chapter than his first chapter, I think, to say the least. So speaking of, that starts Monday, because we have three games. The Predators have three games this week. The first one, a second game against Tampa at 6 p.m. tomorrow. That's Monday, February 1st. We're already in February. Thursday and Friday, back-to-back against the Florida Panthers. So all three road games this week. First chance to see Florida. I have not watched one lick of Florida this year. I barely could tell you who they are. I just know they have Alexander Barkov, and that's enough. He's very good.
Alexander Barkov, the player every Predators fan wanted. was that the year they got Seth Jones? Was that draft?
Maybe.
I can't remember, because everyone's like, we're going to get Barkov. We're going to get Barkov. And it's like, oh, don't worry. Now we're going to get Seth Jones. he's going to kill him.
He's 25, and I think Seth Jones 25 too. Yep, 2013 entry draft. Yep, second overall.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. That's still, man, such a different world, because as we all know, as I've said, Seth Jones is really good at looking like he's doing good things when he's really not.
I think Seth Jones is very good.
I don't see it. I think he's really good at making people think he's good.
Yeah. But anyway, so Florida this week, back to back against Florida. And then, that's it for the week. Only three games this week. So the Predators need some wins. They need to go in, they really need to bounce back against Tampa and see if they can get a win there. Need to get at least one win against Florida in order to look a little bit better going into the first quarter turn of the season, as you mentioned. So that's going to do it for us. You can check out all of our hockey coverage at AtoZSportsNashville.com. Follow me on Twitter at AlexDaugherty1. Follow Link on Twitter at 3DLink. Do you have any final thoughts this week, Forrest?
I do. I actually was prepared this time. So I was watching the Isabel Cup yesterday on Twitch, which is the NWHL tournament taking place in Lake Placid. And so they have the normal broadcast. And they all of a sudden, I was like watching it, and it cuts to kiss cam. And I'm like, I can't believe the NWHL is having a kiss cam. It's also a pandemic. I don't think there's fans in the building. And it just cuts it just cuts to the camera, and it's just a bunch of cardboard cutouts in the stands. So they just zoom in on cardboard cutouts and are just showing the cardboard cutouts on the kiss cam. That's thought it was great. I really enjoyed that. So if you're That's not, you can watch the Isabel Cup. I think it's going to be on. It's going to be on like NBC Sports, isn't it? I think it's going to be, I think it'll be on, I think you can get it on television, but also it's going to be broadcast on Twitch. It's definitely worth watching. It was some good hockey.
If I could add a final thought too.
No, this is my segment.
The NBC Sports channel is going away. So like by the end of this year, there's no more NBC Sports, NBC Sports channel. But, I'm wondering if that means Peacock too. I don't know if you have Peacock TV, the streaming service, but one reason I have it is because they have a lot of Premier League games. Not all of them, but they have most of them now. I can't keep up with how NBC has covered the Premier League since they started coverage. It's been very tricky, because at first they were showing all the games and you could stream all of them, and then it was only a few, and you get some on the website and some on TV, and then now it's like they seem to be all on Peacock. So I don't know, but I'm wondering if that's. Do you know if that's going to stay? The Peacock TV is still going to have Premier League games?
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I mean, they're going to. They still have the Premier League contract, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
The next two dates for the Isabel Cup. So the semifinals are going to be on NBC Sports Network February 4th, at 4:30 p.m. And you can watch that. They're probably going to have that on NBC Sports Network and the app. And then the final is the 5th at 6 Central. I think they're playing semifinal game, or they're playing early games. I don't know if there's a game today, but yeah, February 4th and 5th for the finals. Going to be on NBC Sports Network. Always some good hockey. The NHL, you know, they'll probably schedule 10 games to start at 8 p.m. Eastern for some reason instead of spreading out the day, so it should give you plenty of time to watch.
Right. Well, that's true. The NHL will probably figure out a way to make it the... To make the day as least watchable as possible, including blackout everyone from their games that are in there.
Yeah, there's 7 games, they all have at the same time, and everyone's blacked out. No one can watch out. Any of the games.
They're blacked out because of you should be attending the games in that you can attend. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're already listening to it, then you might have already done that, but if you've not, do it. And we will see you next week. So take it easy, everybody. See ya.